Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy!
I'm Asim, one of the presenters over at Dragon Bites. We're a podcast aimed at paediatric trainees or anyone interested in child health. We're taking over the airwaves briefly for this week at Don't Forget the Bubbles, so we thought we'd share with you something that we do a little bit differently over at Dragon Bites. We get a lot of feedback from trainees here in Wales that they've had trouble writing reflections for their portfolio. So the way we thought we'd help with this is by asking some of them to send theirs in anonymously for us to discuss with local experienced clinicians. The aim being not only to improve everyone's reflective writing skills through listening to examples, but to also discuss the issues it raises around the practice of child health and to get some advice from people who've been in the business for a while. This week, Stacey Harris, one of our other presenters at Dragon Bite, reads a reflection from a trainee about their experiences with the charity Over the Wall. She then discusses the reflection with Dr. Gillian Boddy, a general paediatric consultant from the University Hospital of Wales, and Dr. Kate Burke, one of our fantastic final year neonatal trainees. You can recognise Kate because she has a really strong Liverpudlian accent. Anyway, that's enough for me. Take it away, Stacey.
This summer, I volunteered as a member of the Beach Patrol medical team at an over-the-wall camp for children and young people with health challenges. This was my second camp as a clinical volunteer and seventh overall. I was the Beach Patrol member for a team of 8, 13 to 14-year-olds, all with different medical needs. These needs ranged from daily medication to overnight feeds. The campers also had conditions that carried different levels of stigma and were affected in different ways by their illnesses. My role was to provide medical care for the campers as their parents would be at home. This included giving medications correctly and on time, managing any problems that arose, example, a slipping NG tube, setting up feeds, and fitting these in on busy days, and advising non-medical volunteers about how best to look after the campers, mostly making sure no one fell in the lake and providing sun cream. I was also on hand for any red calls or emergencies. The camp is the one week of the year where I spend all day with a group of young people. I get to know them as people first, and medical condition very much second. And I am always amazed at the journey campers follow during the camp and how much I learn from them. My communication skills with teenagers continue to improve every time I volunteer, and I have felt the difference this makes when assessing young people in CAU. I find that speaking to young adults as themselves, not as parent's child, and respecting the fact that they have their own ideas, concerns and expectations has stood me in good stead for building rapport with teenagers with medical and mental health difficulties on general paediatric wards. I have also found the use of humour to be particularly helpful in connecting with this group. This year, a camper taught me how to set up a feed through a Mickey button, and another taught me how to set up a growth hormone subcut injection. Others taught me the power of perseverance. He learned to flip a fidget spinner over a week's worth of meals and the power of friendship. Firm friends were made by the camper with just one friend at home, and her confidence rocketed. I also saw how the sick role could impact on these campers. A camper who was brought to camp in a wheelchair by his parents walked out having not touched the wheelchair for a week. A camper who never set up his own feeds taught me how to do it. He was very capable, but has always let others take over. I also learnt a lot about leadership and teamwork. Balancing medical needs and participation in camp activities can be difficult, and discussing managing this balancing act with one of the non-medical volunteers required diplomacy and tact. This was particularly difficult, as I was the only member of the team who was aware of exactly what health challenges the campers had. The members of the team who worked particularly well together, sharing tasks efficiently and delegating appropriately, were those who made an effort to get to know each other. This took extra time and effort, discussing after the campers had gone to bed, but had tangible benefits for the team as a whole. This could be compared to arranging and attending team meals and eating together at lunchtime and work. A social effort, but worth it to improve the team dynamic. One thing that struck me was a conversation I had with a student nurse who was helping and shadowing a nurse as part of the beach patrol. She said she always felt that doctors were scary and unapproachable, and she would not feel happy to ask a doctor about their decision making or challenge them, or actually speak to them at all. This saddened and shocked me. I would be mortified to think that student nurses at work didn't feel they could approach me. By the end of the week, the student nurse said her attitude had changed, both because we had discussed issues together and I had turned out not to be scary, and because she gained confidence in her own abilities after gaining new skills at camp. Volunteering in the beach patrol is one of the most level hierarchies I have worked in. Nurses and doctors have slightly different roles at camp. Doctors have to prescribe all the medications, controlled drug checks have to include a nurse, and the nurses are first on call overnight while doctors are second on. However, there is a great respect that all of us have given up a week of our time to volunteer, and all of us bring useful and different skills. It feels like a team of equals bringing complementary skills. Working like this does bring a different perspective to working with nurses in other settings and is beneficial to building a real multidisciplinary team. The camp vibe is of inclusivity and fun. E-learning before camp talks about using person-first language, i.e. a child with asthma, not an asthmatic child, or even worse, the asthma in bed too. We are also taught about I statements in behavioural management, where you talk about how behaviour has made you feel without blaming the child for the behaviour, or worse, labelling the child as naughty or bad. For example, I feel worried that the noise you're making is keeping others awake, instead of, Billy, stop making so much noise. This is difficult in practice, but can be very effective. Inclusive language is encouraged, as is being mindful that not everybody fits traditional family models. This would mean asking, who's coming to pick you up? Not, are your parents coming to get you? This makes everybody, volunteers and campers, feel at home and feel that they can be themselves at camp. The whole week is about the campers having the best time they can, which means being observant, responsible, doing countless nose counts, carrying coats and water bottles, and being silly. Several volunteers were gunged. This means that camp life is quite selfless and very different to my home life, where I can do as I please. Focusing on others for a week gave me a fresh perspective on life, where I gained satisfaction by making other people happy. Each time I come home from camp, I feel that I have pushed a professional reset button. I remember why I choose to be a paediatrician, and I feel energised and enthusiastic about providing the best care I can to children and families. I feel that my patients benefit from me going to camp because I have gained an understanding of how medical conditions affect children and young people, and I can communicate more effectively with them, and now use people-first language far more often and naturally, and work better in a multidisciplinary team. I have gained practical skills I would not have gained during training, and developed my teamwork and leadership skills quickly in an intense environment. This has improved my confidence in my own skills, and I hope that this continues for the rest of the year. I feel that camp is a fantastic and educational experience for anyone who works with children, and especially paediatric trainees. I am therefore telling everyone who will listen about the camp, and have prepared a presentation about my experiences at Over the Wall for a Paediatric Careers Day, a national course this autumn.
So hi, I'm joined by Dr. Kate Burke. She's an ST8 in neonatal grid, and Dr. Gillian Boddy, and she's a consultant paediatrician in University Hospital of Wales in Cardiff. Thank you very much for joining me. You've had a chance to have a little read through the reflection, and I was just wondering what you thought was good about it.
Well, I think the first thing that came to me was actually how nice it was to have a reflection about a really positive experience. I think we're quite good at being critical or talking about things when there's been a disaster or an emergency, or perhaps when we felt a bit out of control. And I like the fact that this was a very positive reflection, actually just really positive about paediatrics, which I think is also really important when we're heading into winter and there's lots of training issues and issues that affect us all through work. I think this was just really nice and positive.
Did you think
it? Yeah, I thought it was great. I agree. How often do we just read something that's a positive account of not even necessarily paediatrics, but just young people in general, and the, you know, the joy it is to work with young people sometimes and the horror that it is other times. But it was nice to just have a reflection that was clearly so positive and that actually took place outside of the hospital as well, because I think my experience in writing reflections is that I don't often think of things that happen outside the hospital which are directly relevant, and they might be really interesting things to reflect upon equally as much as the things that do happen at work.
Yeah, and I think as a trainer and a supervisor, it's easy for us to forget, because we've been there and done that. I think it's really easy to forget that our trainees do a phenomenal amount of stuff outside the hospital and add so much to people's lives, you know, and what they learn from that does have a great influence on work as well.
Yeah, I love the bit where she said that every time she goes on camp, she really learns how to speak to teenagers better, and that helps her work in CAU. And I was like, maybe I need to do that.
Yeah.
I know, I'm so going on one of these camps. It sounds amazing, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think we all think that, don't we? You know, we all go on holiday to recharge, or we go and spend time with kids, or we go and climb a mountain, or sing loudly or bash a drum or whatever we do. But I think what I really liked, as well as being really positive, was that she started to pick out the things where that was going to influence on her work. And one of my big bugbears is something she's mentioned, an asthmatic child or the diabetic. And we all do it. It's so easy to do. And in fact, I know it's one of the things we're really trying to take out of the college exams, because occasionally it slips through into our exam questions. Mm. And I think it's so important to remember that they're the patient who happens to have that, because that's our aim, isn't it? We're treating children. We're aiming to get them, whatever we do, so they can be children taking part in everything and all life and activities. And if we start defining them by their illness, we're just starting on the wrong foot.
Yeah, the bit about inclusive language I really enjoyed as well, and sort of, yeah, I think that's another thing you never think of, like actually reflecting on the semantics of a situation and the consequences that has for how we actually work. But it's right, you know, what's pointed out here, and not just, I mean, the part where she asks who is coming to pick you up rather than are your parents coming to pick you up, we've all made that horrible mistake where you walk into a room and go, mum and dad, and it's grandma and granddad or someone not related at all. And it's just great to have it written down as a reminder and a prompt. And I think it's really insightful to sort of pick that out and make a point of it, because it is part of our everyday work that we probably don't think about enough in that way.
Yeah, and I liked as well the bit about talking about how a behaviour has made you feel. And that's, I mean, you'll start seeing that coming through in interesting things like APLS feedback now is very much moved to this. So in this occasion she said, I'm worried the noise you're making is keeping others awake rather than telling someone to stop making such noise. And we do that again in feedback, you know. I noticed you did X. Can you tell me a bit more about it? Or why did you get to that point? Or that was difficult, rather than tell me what you did well and tell me what you did badly. And certainly when those work really well, it's a really effective way, because it just stops people and thinks, oh, yes, that's true. I did do that, or great, you noticed that, fantastic, you know, I noticed you took care of the mum during that recess. Not you were standing at the back, not doing much, or what were you doing standing at the back? It's just a totally different thing. And I think we can take that through as well. Telling parents to stop smoking. You know, do you smoke? Oh, I only smoke outside. Well, if you say, oh, yeah, but we know smoke carries, that doesn't help. But if you say, brilliant, you've realised smoking has an influence on your child's health, can we help you stop anymore? They might still say no, but it's acknowledging positive steps that people have made or acknowledging a behaviour change, and I think that's really important.
And how powerful the language we use can be in that process for people, rather than alienating them, really bringing them in.
Yeah.
And, I think that for me really stood out for this reflection is that sort of, that concentration on the exact language that we use. And it sounds like the e-learning before the camp was absolutely brilliant. I'd like to do that e-learning as well, because it sounds like, you know, something really positive and useful from a communication point of view.
And that's one of the things I was thinking, that maybe as a the follow-on from this reflection, whether she could have written about how she might introduce that, you know, or make it available, or were there other things available.
Yeah, so, or do a teaching session on inclusive language, which she's clearly now gained some insight into. It'd be a great outcome from this reflection.
Yeah, because you and I both say, gosh, we'd like to do it. Wouldn't that be great? So maybe not the stuff that's available from the charity specifically, but is there, you know, has she looked and seen, are there great little other podcasts, or are there online things that are available, and to highlight that, because that I think that'd be brilliant in terms of other people then learning from her experiences.
That was one of the things that I really loved about this as well, and I was thinking maybe this should be part of our training. We should all like get to go off and do this. It could be put in as like a little week out of placement thing. What do you think?
Maybe. Well, I think any way of talking to teenagers, I think, you know, I'm a bit older than you guys, and teenagers are even younger than me, but they do seem like a whole new breed sometimes. And I think it is really hard to get our language right. To get our approach right. And for teenagers who perhaps have been in the healthcare system, perhaps in some ways, almost as long as some of our trainees. And I think, you know, they know it. They've been there. They've said it 12 times, and actually really empowering them. And perhaps the college and us group and the young people's work is something we should also point out to trainees to get involved in.
Absolutely. And what did you think about when she mentioned about teamwork, you know, about not having a hierarchy and things like that?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because I think we like to think that in paediatrics we're all really approachable and we all understand the value of everyone else. And so it's interesting, isn't it? She said she felt completely saddened that a student nurse said she would never ask or challenge. Because you think, well, I think in my work I think I'm approachable, but then you think, well, I'm probably not. And, you know, and I'm, again, older than some of the trainees. And I know that, you know, I see trainees having very different relationships with nurses, but I think, and other members of the teams, but I think that helps in some ways, because they're not afraid of asking things, but doesn't help perhaps other members of the team who perhaps then want to give feedback. So I think that's quite an interesting...
Well, she describes this moment where the respect that emerges from everyone coming together and giving up a week of their time to volunteer and so on. And I think that, although we all consider paediatrics to be quite a flat hierarchy, I think that because the trainee doctors rotate through jobs, there are all these sort of implicit hierarchies where when you're new, even though you are nominally more senior as the registrar than the nurse who's been there for 11 years, you're ultimately deferent to them because you know that they know more than you about the context you're working in, and you might have very specific information, but by and large they will guide you in a way that's useful and helpful and appropriate. So I think that hierarchies is something that we don't talk about enough. We say that we hope that paediatrics is a level hierarchy, and we try to emphasise that at things like APLS and NLS and so on, but it's actually a really complex terrain to navigate as a trainee and probably as a consultant as well.
I was going to say, carry on.
Where am I in how can I be both authoritative and respectful and assertive, but display humility and so on. And obviously coming together in a situation like this camp provides a lovely opportunity to just start again, doesn't it? Sort of on a blank slate, essentially. And it's interesting how she contrasts that with the realities of the situations that we do work in when we come to our jobs every day. But that made me feel really sad as well, that that had been such a stark difference for her, but also that, you know, that one of the student nurses had had this experience of feeling like we as doctors were not particularly approachable.
Yeah.
I mean, how terrible.
I know.
You know, and that's obviously something that we are doing, or something that the education system that nurses go through is doing, to make them feel that, you know, approaching a doctor or challenging a doctor or asking a question is to be taken with some gravity, you know.
Yeah,
you would hope that that isn't the case, but perhaps it is.
And that's interesting, because I always think that nursing students act up into a role more quickly than our trainees. You know, the nursing students do their last week or their last placement as management, and so they take it in turns at running the ward and being in charge. And you think, I'd always thought that that would give them some sort of confidence to think they could approach people or say something, and it isn't. But what she hasn't talked about here is how perhaps she can now take that back, and what things she could do back in her workplace to help that.
I think even often just explicating your experience is a useful thing. Like, I would love to hear this doctor stand up and talk about this at an MDT, because I'm sure that actually just pointing out that that was her experience would make people feel completely differently about, you know, about their role and responsibility within a team. It's actually, it's your right to challenge, but it's actually also your responsibility to challenge decisions that you don't feel are good. And I think sometimes we say that at APLS and so on, but it doesn't, for some reason, it doesn't always join up in the right way.
No.
And how do we make sure that it does? How do we emphasise it and make sure that it becomes part and parcel of everyday work?
Yeah. And I think perhaps in, there'll be some, perhaps in some work environments where that would be easier to take that conversation back and say, look, this happened. How can we change that in our ward environment? And perhaps if you work in a small unit, I'm thinking perhaps in neonates where you're, though I know neonatal units aren't small anymore, but where you've got a very confined team, perhaps that is a place that's perhaps a bit easier. Whereas if you work in a very big hospital and you dot in and out of different wards, that also adds its layers of challenges. But whether it is something that needs to be looked at by teams, or whether this trainee has gone back now and said, look, this was the experience, how can we empower our nurses to say something, or our junior doctors to say when they don't like the decision that their seniors made or the consultants made, you know, and really make sure that people, we really do mean it when we say anyone can ask us a question, you know, please don't be afraid to do that.
We ran a particular type of intervention on NICU, the PACE intervention, which is designed to sort of like, basically it's a graded assertiveness tool for people, and we trained everyone in it, the student nurses, the secretaries, everyone else, and it made such a difference to the way people communicate, because when you saw them start to use the tool, you knew you were being challenged. So it basically made sure that you explicated your reasoning immediately, rather than waiting to the point where rather than just being I need to know more about why you're doing this, to the point where it becomes hostile and someone is like, I don't like what you're doing, you know. So it's amazing how those small interventions can make a massive impact. But what I do realise now is that we didn't go back to the student nurses and ask them, you know, are you more empowered? We've trained you in this tool, but has it changed the way you feel you can approach us? And I think we do things like encourage student nurses to attend huddle or to come on our ward rounds, but do we actually know that that makes them feel any more included or valued? You know, do we ask the right question at the end to get to know if our interventions are working?
So what is this PACE? I think I might know what it is, but...
We can talk about it.
Okay.
I can't remember the details of it, but it's basically, we just laminated it on a card, and it's basically the last two are challenge the decision and then declare an emergency. Probe, assertive, challenge, and then an emergency. And it's basically just, it's a graded assertiveness tool. So you say, I'm just asking why you're doing that. I can't understand your reasoning. That's the probe. Assertiveness is that the right decision? I would have done it like this. Challenges, I actually don't think that's the right decision. And then emergency is stop. We're not doing the right thing. So it's just a graded assertiveness tool. But it's amazing how once you're tuned into it, you recognize start to recognize the P immediately, and the P makes you then expose all of your thinking. And certainly it's been a really successful intervention, particularly sort of in resuscitations or reintubations and so on, to make people feel that they can challenge if they feel like something isn't moving forward in the right way.
Yeah, I've seen it used in simulation teaching on a sort of step up to registrar or stepping up to the middle grade rota course, you know, in a sick baby scenario that did need an LP at some point, but actually at this point was crashing, and the registrar, new registrar, was on the phone to the consultant, who was just saying, just do the LP. You know I like LPs. Do the LP. And a strategy was saying, no, I'm not going to do it. Why do you want me to do it? No. And then eventually saying, no, I'm not doing it. But it is quite interesting when you've tried to have that conversation, then you rerun the sim saying, right, here's some tools. It gives people the edge.
Yeah, it gives people a format which makes them feel like they can confidently assert themselves in a non-confrontational way.
I think it also gives the challenger the opportunity to voice why they're unhappy, and I think sometimes perhaps you might not have made that clear as to why you don't want to do an LP or whatever it is, but it gives you a chance to say this. You know, why do you want to do it? This is why I don't want to do it. And I think so it just helps you formulate thoughts. I think it came from the airline industry to give anyone in the cabin. It's one of the ones that are
human factors tools.
Yeah, I realise there's loads of these things that we can use from outside, actually inside medicine. What did you think about she learned a lot from patients, didn't she? What do you think about that?
There was the bit about the peg feeding, wasn't it? And actually, I liked the bit as well about the patient, as it were, the camper arriving in the wheelchair and then walking out. And I think that's fantastic. I think we constantly underestimate what our patients can do. I think we constantly underestimate what children can do. And I think when we get to teenagers, we're perhaps even more. Not critical. I think we're more presumptive about what we think they might think, or what they might think about their medical care, or what they might want. But I think that's brilliant. I think actually, as a doctor, saying I'm quite a senior doctor, but actually I don't know how that works. This is something you deal with every day. Your family deal with every day. I actually don't. Our nursing staff deal with every day. I've got no idea.
Show me how it works.
Show me how to do that. Mm-hmm. And how empowering for that young person to think, actually, I have got control of this. I do know my medical condition. I can self-care. We don't know the rest of it, but just in that, even if that's one bit that they feel they're in charge of.
And I can teach a doctor how to do
and
it.
How empowering. And I think that with the focus on transition that's happened in the last few years, there's lots of lovely examples here of things that have emerged from transition. We've started to ask ourselves, you know, like, how can we best support young people in these transitions in life? But I think what she demonstrates here is the power of taking someone out of their normal environment and just valuing them as an individual, you know, not as a patient or as a person with asthma or whatever else, but as a human being going about the earth with various pragmatic difficulties to be managed and dealt with.
Yeah.
And I think what does this story tell us? It tells us that this kid can do this all by themselves. And for whatever reason in that family system, they let someone else do it. Yeah. And that might be because, you know what, it might be entirely reasonable, and it might be half an hour a day where they don't have to think about their illness.
Yeah.
It might be that a parent or a carer really values doing that as an act of love or as an act of being attentive and tender.
Yeah.
Or it may be just they haven't thought about it and they need to revisit it and think, is there some way we can move this forward and empower you to do it yourself?
Yeah, I do think that comment you made then about actually, do they want someone else to do things so they don't have to think about it? I think it's really important to remember, because we do. You see now the new children with the new or children with a new diagnosis of diabetes, for instance, from a very young age, being taught to do their injections, to test, to be involved. And that's really important, so they know. But I've also heard of patients who just say, I just want a month or a week or a weekend when someone else is in charge of it and I can just be a kid.
Yeah.
And I don't have to worry about that. Yes, I know I'm going to have to for the rest of my life and it is part of me, but actually I just want to do the normal things. I want to not worry about doing the medical things. So I think it's really important actually from this to look at both sides of it.
To think about what underpins the behaviour or the action, because there'll be so many motivations at play that we as clinicians only get such a slither of an insight into, but trying to expose that more is such a valuable process where you can. And that really jumped out at me is that description of, you know, like these kids are clearly enormously capable, as children almost always are.
Yeah.
What made them want to be different for this week, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what struck me, is that we feel like we know quite a lot about these conditions and how it affects children, but I don't think we have any idea really, do we, until we've been in this such a sort of situation and been with them and seen them as a person and how they deal with it and things. Then maybe we can learn a lot, can't we?
And I think some of these things also empower their parents suddenly. So suddenly they were parent with some kids and now they've got a child with a medical condition. Not that people would want that for their child, but actually some of them, they are transformed into the most phenomenal parents who campaign and fight and advocate for their children. And I think sometimes, sadly, when children die or if children actually learn the things themselves, the parents feel a real bereavement, so may, as you say, want to hang on to that, because that's something they feel they
that's
can
how
do
loved them
and
how
they've
cared
loved them
for them and kept them alive. And you know,
and suddenly they're going to have a very different relationship with them or a big gap in their lives, and I think that's not to be underestimated either.
No.
That's really good.
No. So is there anything about this reflection that could be done differently, do you think, to make it a better reflection? You did mention about putting it sort of back into what they would do or what they could improve on when they went back to work.
I think that it's always tricky, isn't it, when you think about a reflection, because a reflection can just be a reflection for reflection's sake. There doesn't necessarily need to be an outcome or a learning point or anything else. It can just be, I've described what this was. It was powerful to me. It was meaningful to me.
Yeah.
And these are the snippets that I took away. I mean, obviously the person who does this reflection says that they'll tell anyone who will listen about the camp and has prepared a presentation about their experiences, which is fantastic, because it does sound like for a lot of people this is something they could be involved in and do really well.
Yeah.
So I actually really enjoyed, I was really refreshed by this reflection.
Yeah,
and there wasn't an enormous amount that I feel would embellish it. I want to hear more of the stories, in fact, and more of the laughs and jokes that happened
absolutely.
And so on.
Yeah.
I want to know if she learnt to use the fidget spinner. I want to know, you know, so I didn't feel like there was anything missing from the account.
No.
But as you said, there's always more that you can give.
What I loved was she has written down, it's a long reflection, and reflections don't have to be long, but actually each thing, each section in it, each reason, part of it is she's got a reason why she's put it in there. So why is she put about this section? Well, that paragraph's about communication, and she's topped up her communication skills again. This is about understanding that actually patients can teach us something, and actually sometimes we need to just admit we don't know. You know, this bit's about her language. So although there's quite a lot of words, she in each section has said what she has learned from it. And like Kate says, it doesn't have to be something that everyone else learns, but she has learned, and no doubt how she acts now, she will teach other people. Other people will learn. They'll listen to her language and say, oh, that I like the way she said that. Or, gosh, that was a great teenage conversation she had. Or, wow, she didn't go straight in and just ask the parents. She asked the child, well, what do you do and how much do you do? And I think that's it. Yeah, you could add even more by telling us how she's going to bring those back to her workplace, and is there going to be anything more formal or structured, or point out things for trainees, you know, and is this something that if she finds an article about positive conversations, now we've discussed that, you know, she can point those out to other trainees, but actually in terms of her learning, I think this is really clear that she has learnt from it. And that's what I want from reflection. I want to be clear why she's put this on her. Why is this on her portfolio? It's because she's learnt so much.
I love it. I love that bit at the end. Positive. I feel like I've pushed the professional reset button, which absolutely. I just think is such a nice phrase, because I think often, you know, when we work in demanding, intense jobs, we feel like what we need to do to replenish ourselves is do less or do nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's an example of someone who took a week of their time and went out and did more.
Yeah.
And, you know, and felt better for it. And isn't that a nice lesson that, you know, that there are other ways to recharge our batteries? And I think we've all had that experience when you're involved in something that you really love doing at work, that actually, even though it's incredibly hard work and incredibly demanding, you get such a lift off doing something well, be it a QI project or an audit or a piece of teaching. And I think sometimes we let that slip from our minds, though there is a place for just doing nothing as well.
Absolutely right. I like the idea of being beach patrol. It didn't sound like she sat there and did nothing.
No. That's the name of the group. And quite intense, the beach patrol. Yeah.
Brilliant. So, do you have any tips or anything for reflections at all?
No. I mean, I think this reflection to me is just a very authentic reflection, and when you read reflections you can always feel the ones that have been written because the person wanted to write them and they wanted to gather their own thoughts and record them and sum up an experience, or be it a positive experience or a negative experience, describe it, sum it up, show what they can take away from it, or show what the points for development are. And that in part is a therapeutic process sometimes, but it's often also such a powerful educational process. And I just think that just emphasising how there are things we're told to reflect upon, like resuscitations or conflicts with colleagues or conflicts with families, and then there are things that we might be naturally drawn to reflect on, and they're both equally valuable, provided that they're but the ones that are written from an authentic place where you're driven to write and record something are often the most powerful. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, I think so. I think my feeling is always we have to reflect, and it's something I struggled with as a trainee as well, and I still have moments when I struggle with it as a consultant, but I think, oh, I know I want to reflect on this, but I'm not quite sure why. But I think that's the key, is when you're writing a reflection, you think, why do I think this is something to reflect on? Did I come home from work chuntering about it for whatever reason? Have I come home from work actually thinking, God, what a fabulous day? Well, reflect on it. What was about today that made it fabulous? And then think, which bits of that day can I replicate? Some of it may be totally out of your control, that, you know, actually you've got a full rota and all your colleagues were there, and patients came in at a steady pace through the assessment unit and you dealt with them all really well and you made a marvellous diagnosis. And that's a great day, isn't it? Most of that's out of your control. But you can still take from that that actually you've got the confidence, you've made good decisions, you've processed people, you've probably managed some teaching in that as well. You know, if you encourage more people into paediatrics, maybe we'll have a few more people on our rotas.
You've had good relationships
You've had
with
good
your
relationships
colleagues.
With parents. So I think you can always reflect on something. I think I always worry when the description of the event is longer than the reflection. I think that's time to have a little look and a redress and a rebalance, because actually you don't need to know whether you gave point one of something as opposed to point two, or did you do something for 5 minutes and it should have been for six. I think it's about, why did those things happen? Was it that we were all tired? Was it that I wasn't confident enough to say, I think we're doing it wrong, or I think we're doing it right, or can I be the leader? I think it's about that. So I think my tip would be, really think about why you're putting your reflection on there. What is it that made you think that was something to reflect on? Good, bad, indifferent, something you saw two other people doing? You know, was that a great conversation you watched? Was that a really challenging conversation? I think that's my tip, and an emphasis on the why you're putting it on there and what you're learning from it, rather than the description of the event. You know, that should be almost, you shouldn't be able to tell who that patient is or which hospital you were in or what happened. It should be a very basic statement, and then the learning from that. That would be my tip.
Yeah, wonderful. Anything else? Oh, wow, thank you very much, both of you. I really enjoyed hearing you talk about that. I learned a lot as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was, without doubt, one of the best reflections I've ever heard and puts anything I've written to shame. It shows a degree of insight and maturity that I'm probably far too childish to be capable of myself. I think Kate and Gillian have highlighted a whole series of learning points we can take away from that reflection on top of what the trainee experienced themselves. I just wanted to thank the trainee who sent that reflection in to us. It's been fantastically inspiring.
Also, can we give a massive thank you to Don't Forget the Bubbles for letting us host this week. That's all there is for me. Thank you for listening to Drying Bites via Don't Forget the Bubbles.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for listening.